afternoon, everyone. Where you are. We're broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. This is the Two Johns Science Fiction Podcast, sponsored by Scenolithic Press and Fresh Pulp Magazine. And we want to take this opportunity to thank you for all for attending.
So you entertain everybody for 2 seconds. Tell them what we're going to talk about while I finish getting this sorted.
Well, we are going to talk about several things. We're going to talk about this, the latest book from C.J. Cherry. I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly. Emergence. It's actually the 19th book in her Foreigner series, and we've both gotten into it, and we're going to discuss it and use that as a platform, like we with everything we talk about, to talk about sci-fi and fiction in general.
Yes,
we're going to discuss, I believe, the film Infinity Chamber.
Yes,
which is small budget sci-fi film that we both watched and enjoyed, and we're going to dive a little bit into the topic that everyone is talking about, which is the latest film in the Star Wars franchise, which is of course The Last Jedi.
Yes. Okay, here we go. Uh-huh. So we're live streaming on Facebook now. So we're going to talk about The Last Jedi, but let's. Should I?
On the other side of your mic.
You're on the other side of my mic. Okay. I'm gonna move this over a little bit.
All right.
So, logistical issues. There we go.
But you only learn from mistakes.
Mistakes and failure, which this so far is...
No, I'm kidding. It's not.
Okay. So, also, anybody who chooses to come in and look at the live stream or drop in, feel free to just say hello, ask a question... or whatever. Share the stream, let everybody know that we're online. So we're going to start off by talking about... We have a roundup, right? We're going to talk about a roundup. What movie were we talking about? Some movies are coming out this...
Well, what movies are coming out soon? It's funny because all the movies that I like that are coming out are ones that are not science fiction. And I don't know whether that's indicative of the state of science fiction. Or at least I wouldn't consider them science fiction because they're, you know... I wouldn't consider like superhero movies to be.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider that
science fiction.
I wouldn't consider it that either.
Not that they're bad because I like a lot of them, but
yeah, I just sort of feel like they're getting to this point. So the one we've been talking about the past couple of months is Annihilation. Oscar Isaacs and Natalie Portman,
which absolutely looks like a clear winner. I can't imagine. I can't imagine what could go wrong with that particular premise and with. The little bits and pieces I saw from a trailer.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, you know, you can make a really bad movie look good in a trailer, but I think that one just looks amazing. The concept is incredible. The way that they've set the characters up, you know, there's actual something going on with the characters. It's not just person confronts weird situation. There's something going on. There's an emotional thing going on. There's relationship between the characters. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. And it really looks like the kind of thing. Portman looks like she belongs in the movie.
Yes.
You know, sometimes you'll see a trailer and the person just looks like, what am I doing?
Right, they're lost.
I have no idea. But she completely looks comfortable and natural in that trailer. And I think it bodes well for the movie.
Well, it's also a good casting pair. Because it's like Oscar Isaacs, I think, is the other lead.
Yeah,
they're both not. Neither of them are science fiction neophytes, so they understand.
No,
you know,
so they get the pacing and the you know. You don't want someone who's only done rom coms suddenly have a shock reaction and then like
go from Black Swan to Annihilation,
exactly.
Right? or whatever it was. Jackie,
Black Swan was weird too. It had its own weirdness that is a different kind of weirdness, but some of that emotional
part
can transfer from one genre to another.
Yes.
But yes, that's going to be an absolutely fantastic movie. I can't wait to see it so we can actually talk about it.
Yeah. We'll be reviewing that on here. we'll be instituting the star system, the star rating system, because we're going to go through and instead of just me on video giving out the stars, it'll be both of us and we'll kind of average the two.
But Siskel and Ebert.
The Siskel and Ebert, the two Johns, yeah. Right. So the other interesting thing that came out recently that I think we have to mention it, which is Electric Dreams.
Oh yeah,
which just came out.
I haven't gotten a chance to get into that, but I do like the idea of them because it's, I mean, that has become that particular, which it was a short story originally, right?
It wasn't even a full novel. Right. Well, it was a collection. Well, they, Electric Dreams is a short story, but they eventually made the show called Electric Dreams based upon
upon the story. But it's so bizarre because of the film that was made from it, and then of course the second film. But to go back and look at something that has become, even when there was only the one film, it was such an incredibly powerful part of our culture and part of the whole, you know, the whole sci-fi, you know, when someone was talking about sci-fi, that film, it was central. It was so bizarre that it all came from a short story.
Yes.
And now it's finally becoming the kind of phenomenon that it probably should have been all along.
Yeah.
And, but still, I think it's amazing that one film just sort of, I mean, it survived so long.
Yes.
It's not like Aliens, which was came out around the same time as Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And, but it had.
Like it was like 3 years before Blade Runner. I think Blade Runner was like 81 or 82. Yeah. But in that
same kind of period where.
Back when they actually still did set design.
Yeah. And, yes. And when people had sort of gotten tired of all the Star Wars knockoffs, and those were two movies that came out that were like, yeah, you don't have to do sci-fi like that.
Right.
You can do it. You can do different things. And but Alien, of course, has had a lot of sequels that's kept it current. But Blade Runner hasn't. And yet how many years later they talked about doing the sequel? And it was as much enthusiasm as if Blade Runner had just come out 5 years ago.
Well, that's because people who love Blade Runner, people who are into Blade Runner, they love, like, everybody that I know has Blade Runner, the Vangelis soundtrack, like, the Blu-ray, and with that, like, the laser disc, like, they have everything.
And the director's cut.
Right. And there's always debate, if you find a fellow Blade Runner fan, there's always this debate about which one was the best, you know.
Right.
Is it the director's cut or is it the original? And,
right.
What does it mean when he died at the end and the dove flew off? Like, you know, whatever. So
what was with the origami?
Right. And there's so much to say about Blade Runner, which we won't because we don't have time for that.
Right.
I think I have an essay in the works about it because there's been so much speculation about it.
But when we get to the end of the first season of Electric Dreams, we should discuss. We should
I watched it already, and I'm not going to.
Is it bingeable?
It's totally bingeable.
Okay.
It's like Black Mirror. It's like 6 or 7 episodes.
Oh, okay, that's not true.
And Black Mirror was okay. This and people are comparing the two because they're anthology type stories. But the truth is that they're very different. And honestly, I feel like they did a really good job of capturing Philip K. Dick's vision. The only thing that I don't have any gripes with any of it. Almost all of it I liked. I love the fact that Janelle Monáe is in one of it. They have Bryan Cranston's in it, Janelle Monáe. Huh. They got like all-star casts for a lot of these stories.
Well, that says something about that story too, able to attract that sort of talent. Right,
exactly. It does have this, at times, I had only a few gripes with it, which I'll go over when we actually watch it. But it's a good series. And I would suggest everybody go and take a look at it if they can. So should we move on to...
Do we want to dive into the thing we liked, or are we going to dive into the thing that we sort of have our...
Let's get past the vitriol. Let's dive into the thing that we didn't like.
Okay.
And then...
Let's do that.
And then...
And then we can end on a high note where we're actually saying something nice about someone.
Yes, and we can enjoy the rest of our afternoon.
So, but we're not alone.
We're not alone.
The film that we're going to talk about has, I think, currently a 50%
on
rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Viewer rating is 50% on Rotten Tomatoes.
The critics, of course, liked it better, and I think it's probably because the critics don't understand
stories or structures.
Exactly. Like, what is wrong with this story?
Plots.
Right.
Three-act arcs. They don't understand anything like that.
And also the fact that stories need to be internally consistent, even if they're in a fantastical setting.
Yes.
They have to not break their own rules. There's a reason for that, is that you don't... It's kind of hard to care about characters when you can just bend the rules anytime that you feel like it.
Yes.
And because then nothing going on inside of the character's head matters, because, you know, the screenwriters will run in to save them.
Yes.
By changing...
Well, kind of.
Well, or either save them or sometimes put them into peril that doesn't make sense, or sometimes just... sidetrack them in something that doesn't make sense, and that was really what was a lot wrong with that film. And I'm not a big Star Wars fanboy, so it's not me sitting here stomping my feet saying, yeah, he is. Which is why whenever we talk about the canon, I have no, I've never read any of them. I might have read Timothy Zahn novel at some point.
Yeah, he's written other stuff.
And I read when I was younger. I read the novelization of the first film, the episode four.
Yeah.
So it's not that I'm a big fanboy, and I don't think that none of the rules should ever change. But when you add new things to a story, you can't unravel the stuff that happened before.
Right.
It just doesn't, you know, it.
Yeah, I know. I agree with that, and they have all kinds of theories and reasons. I mean, this thing has been
right.
And granted, we're late to the party because we got this podcast. You know, we just started.
Yes.
But this thing has been picked apart ad nauseum, and I think what we're going to do is talk about that, irrespective of what other people's opinions are.
Right.
We're going to focus in on what we didn't like about the movie or what we did like. And the funny thing about it is that, and I'm going to put a disclaimer out there because everybody that I know was like, I hate going to watch movies with you because you're so critical of them. And the funny thing is that nobody pays attention to my star ratings.
Right.
Okay. Like I gave The Force Awakens like. Almost all bad stars.
Right.
But in other movies, I'm critical, but I will, you and I both know one thing that I absolutely can't tolerate is a bad script.
Yes. Because this was a terrible script.
It was a Frankenstein of a monster.
It was so bad of a script that an experience that I have often, and maybe this is only because I write, is that I was watching the script and I'm just like, wow, they just needed to scrub this three more times and have people ask serious questions about certain scenes. And it would have been a way better movie, you know?
Yes.
I'm not saying it would have made it a good movie, but some of the things were so obviously just, why is this in here?
Why is this in here, exactly. Or you knew why it was in there, but it was like there was no foreshadowing. It just magically, right. You know.
Or it didn't even make sense. The one scene that didn't even make sense in the story was, where were Flynn and Rose escaping to?
Right.
They were escaping to nowhere.
Sorry.
When they were escaping from the evil gunrunner casino cliche, you know.
Right. Which was like this weird allegory for like greed and decadence and capitalism.
It's like there are people sitting around working on the script and they're like, you know what? We haven't injected a message about how bad it is to sell weapons in the world and how greedy all that. The whole thing was just like a sermon that it had some plot barely injected into it.
Yes.
And someone clearly also wishes that they would rather have been working on a James Bond movie.
Yes.
And it just came off as so unnecessary. I mean, I almost am waiting for someone to put out, you know, a fan version of the film where they just cut that whole sequence out.
Yes.
Because at the end of it, they're escaping, and the whole time I'm thinking, where do you think you're going?
Yes.
You have nobody to hack, so you're just going back to the ship to just die with them?
Right.
It just didn't make any sense.
No matter how heroic you are.
Yeah, it makes no sense in the film.
Rebellion's cause is not served by you reinserting yourself back into like certain death.
But as we've talked about, that is a problem with this film anyway, is that there's no sense that the characters have any practical, they have nothing practical going on up here. And, you know, it's a film.
Why can't you just let me enjoy the fact that it's complete nonsense?
Well, see, but that's the thing. Like, it goes back to what we were talking about, how you can't just say that something's just fiction and just dismiss all the, you know,
right.
The fantastical setting. That's fine. You know, there are lightsabers and movies that have dragons and magic and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But when it gets right down to it, it's down to what Brian McDonald called the golden theme, which is that we all have this one thing in common, and all stories are about what's going on in our head and our growth as people.
Yes.
And so, you know, any story, including this one, the people have to be believable as people.
Yes.
And to me, I'm watching someone who knows we came to this place because if we don't get this hacker, everybody's dying. And then they're escaping from a temporary problem.
Yes.
To where?
Right.
And I'm like, if I'm sitting in the audience and I'm realizing that you have nowhere to escape to,
right.
Why aren't you realizing?
Right.
And so it just...
Just stay in the casino, dude.
Yeah.
But let me take it back to the primary underlying theme that I have a problem with, okay? And really, when you acknowledge that this is a problem, then really the rest of the movie kind of falls apart. And there's like a degree of suspension of disbelief and all that other stuff, but I think that they kind of...
In the trappings, though.
Yeah, absolutely. So this whole idea, first of all, that Rey... And by the way, like, I love her character. I think, honestly, if you're going to write a character who's that potentially compelling and for an actress who's as good as Daisy Ridley... You're doing her a disservice when you don't do it right.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that Rey's character is Force sensitive. She's just very powerful, whatever. But literally in the first movie, The Force Awakens, she's like picking up a lightsaber, and she's fighting with Kylo Ren, and she's, like, defeating him.
Who's had years of training.
He's had years of training. He's, like, a Sith Lord and training a Sith Lord. He's, like, a Sith Lord's apprentice. Like, look at Darth Maul, who's, like, such a badass that
people
he literally...
People are going to call you on saying that Snoke was a Sith Lord.
Well, you know, he's a Force sensei. Right, he's a dark... Whatever the hell he is. He's a dark Force user. But anyway, my point is that Nick can call me on if they want, but the truth is that, like, Kylo Ren is clearly a Jedi. Right. He's a dark Jedi. He's had years of training. Okay, the sword is... The lightsaber is goofy, okay? It doesn't lend itself to any really good choreography.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's one thing that the prequels had on all the other movies was the choreography. The fight choreography was awesome.
Adding different kinds of lightsabers, but it made sense. Because it had something to do with the fighting style.
Right. He's got this sword that's like a claymore with like these little things on the side. Whatever. So, and I could see if, like, he used the little things on the crossbar to, like, you know, stab somebody with them or whatever, but it was never practically used.
No.
Anyway, so the thing that's really absurd is John Boyega, whose character I think is awesome, he picks up the lightsaber.
That's another thing,
and he uses the lightsaber, like, fairly competently for about a minute and a half, and then he gets taken out, and then Daisy Ridley's like, oh, let me grab the lightsaber, and then she defeats Kylo Ren, and now... I would be willing to accept a certain level of that for a minute. But then they carried that whole theme into the second movie.
Right.
Where she goes and she finds Luke, and Luke's like, I'm not going to train you. And she's like, well, the Force is, you know, the Force is good for something other than, like, moving rocks. Which really kind of dismisses the central theme of the whole movie, which is the use of not the central theme, but the central element of the movie, which is the Force. Which is like, okay, it's just for moving rocks, but by the way, I'm a badass anyway, so I don't need you. That's pretty much what ended up happening. And I had a problem with that because it didn't.
Because if we remember, you know, Luke was, you know, very strong in the Force too. But he spent the half of the second movie running around with a frog on his back and
in a jungle.
Yeah, and actually putting effort into it.
Yes,
which is what my main problem with these, you know, these the sequel trilogy. Is that it's just people getting things without working for it.
Right.
And that the story there, which is, you know, going back to Brian McDonald's, the actual story, which is what's going on inside the person, is not there.
Yes.
The characters are really engaging. You know, Flynn is engaging. Rey is engaging. You like them. You know, you come out of the movie liking them.
Yeah.
And hating the people who wrote their story.
Yes.
Because the story is just empty.
Yes.
All this stuff happens on the outside, and very little happens on the inside.
Agreed. That is... And it kind of leads to other things that don't really make any sense. You know, this whole idea that Luke is, you get to this central part of the whole problem that started this thing, which is Luke was Kylo Ren's teacher. You know, you find that out. And at some point he's like, well, I figured out that he was, you know, that Snoke had gotten to him and he was starting to learn to use the dark side. So I went in there to kill him. And I was thinking to myself, dude, you're a Jedi. You're a Jedi.
Yeah.
You're a Jedi. Like, your job is not to go in there and murder children in their beds. Like, you're either a Jedi dude or not. And the fact that he was even contemplating that notion is so... It flies in the face of everything that I think the Jedi are supposed to be. And,
right.
and the truth be told, if you're going to murder a child in his bed, then maybe the Jedi Order should just go extinct anyway.
Right. Well, that's eventually what he decides.
That's what he decides. But the thing is that what you're basically telling me is that Luke, by as an extension of your bad writing... means that neither of you is no longer qualified to carry the Jedi legacy forward in any storytelling fashion at all. So to me, it's like, okay, Kylo Ren is now turning to the dark side, but what you did by going in there to kill him and then thinking, you know, him seeing you trying to kill him, is you drove him further to the dark side.
Right.
When really what you should have done was went to go confront
Snoke.
Go find Snoke, take him out,
and
be like, I just killed the Emperor, dude. I didn't even lift a finger. Right. So... How did that happen? So that is a major plot hole that I had a problem reconciling. Like, this idea that you're a Jedi and you're supposed to be good and you're supposed to be propagating good in the universe, but you briefly think about murdering someone who's your own blood because they might be receiving instruction from a Sith Lord.
Sitting there thinking that you don't get to that point. You don't get to that point within a day. He must have suspected for a long time.
Right.
Which means that he's kind of... You know, you have to kind of see a lot of backstory that they didn't put into the film.
Yes.
But obviously, if he's known about this for a long time, he has been trying to win Ben back, which means he kind of threw a tantrum.
Right.
About how incapable he was of winning an argument with Ben over Snoke. But even if it wasn't out loud.
Yes.
So if he had known about this for a long time, it means he clearly had been trying to you know, keep Ben on the right side, and he just wasn't able to do it. And then it's just, you know, like so many people do when they get frustrated and they can't win an argument, he just lost his cool.
He lost his
cool. Well, like he always does. Like Luke always does.
But at the one point where it was... where it was absolutely essential that he not lose his cool, he did, which is in Return of the Jedi.
Right.
Which is when he's, rather than continuing to fight his father, he stops and throws his lightsaber on the ground. He says, I've beaten you. And basically by doing that, and I like to think that he used the Force, he's channeling the Force to bring his father back to the lightsaber Force. Well, why didn't you do that with Ben? He's a kid.
If you can bring Darth Vader.
Right. If you can bring Darth Vader back to the good side after like 20 years, then clearly... you can bring a kid back who's, like, just confused.
Yeah.
So, and also, like, how do you explain to, like, your sister and, like, your brother-in-law that you were like, yeah, by the way, I unleashed this massive existential threat on the universe pretty much by almost murdering your son.
Yeah.
So, so that was, that part of it was
goofy. That was a little weird, but it was just a weird in a whole bunch of weirdness in that film. You didn't have a lot of problem with this, but I had a problem with the fact that I can't remember her name.
Oh, really? I didn't have a problem with it.
What was the admiral? I can't remember what her name is now.
Laura Dern, but
Laura Dern's character. It's like, and why, Admiral if Walter. She was going to sacrifice herself anyway, why didn't she turn and do the trick to begin with instead of wasting all that time
and fuel?
And not only that, but then at least her death would have been meaningful. So it was like. You had these two things where she dies both ways.
Yes.
And one of them is much more, and plus one of them is much more militarily sound.
Right.
And she didn't do it until the last, and then it was like at the last minute, suddenly it was like, oh, and I'm like, how did you get to be an admiral?
Right.
You know, that just did, you know.
Yes.
That, well, also, that bothered me. And
yeah.
And the one thing we do agree on, which is the whole fiasco with Flan and Rose at the, you know, with the, on the speeders when he was flying into the cannon.
Right. It was...
I don't even know what even to think about that scene.
Well, here's the thing about that scene is that there's a divergence between what I consider to be gratuitous sentimentality and action. And it was substance versus theme. And ideally, the writer's job, and by the way, the reason why John Nelson and I are so hard on this movie is because we're both writers, okay?
Right.
And so when we see things that are thematically or even substantially wrong or structurally wrong in the movie, we're going to say something. Mm-hmm. But when it starts to pile up, it becomes so hard for us to ignore it and enjoy the movie.
Because every writer is going to make, and even a group of writers, they're going to make a movie and there's going to be some part of it that you're like, what? But this movie was just all the way through and at its core.
Flawed.
Just flawed. Yes. And it's been flawed since the first prequel movie because, as I, you know, there doesn't seem to be any sense among the writers about what a story is.
Yes.
You know, they just think that it's a series of intrigues and fight scenes, and it's like, no.
Right. Or let's just mine the cinematic universe.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but thematically, ideally, you want the theme and the substance to converge.
Right.
That's when you're going to get the most potency out of your story. And so in that scene with the speeder, she's like, rams him. Okay, forget about the fact that she could have hurt, like injured him or killed him.
She pulls a brawn on him.
Right, she pulls a brawn, Game of Thrones reference, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, right before she passes out, she's like, you know, you don't win a war by destroying what you hate. You win a war by preserving what you love. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, you win a war, you preserve what you love by destroying what you hate. Because that thing which you hate is trying to destroy what you love.
And moreover, that's what he was trying to do. He was trying to preserve the resistance.
Right.
And... he would have succeeded. All she succeeded in preserving was one person.
Right.
And he was trying to sacrifice his life to preserve, however many people.
I think by that time they had like eight rebels. Eight rebels were left.
But it was so bizarre to me that it was like, it just made no.
Well, he understood something that a lot of people don't when they write these scenes. War is a numbers game. Okay.
Right.
It's a numbers game. War is attrition. It's not, you can't bank on the idea that there's some symbolic victory is going to be won, and it's going to have some desired effect. You bank on the fact that you have destroyed the enemy, and you have...
convinced them not to fight.
Yes.
Yeah. But it goes back to the Dreadnought scene, where Poe was getting dressed down for doing something that was absolutely sound.
Right.
Which was wiping out a huge...
Dreadnought.
Yeah, a huge weapon, a huge threat. And, it was... The premise was that Leia was complaining about was that it was
At what cost?
They took too many casualties. At the cost of not losing everybody.
Yes.
Because that's what happens. And the thing about that is you can sit there and complain that people who are writing that, they don't understand how war works. They don't understand military issues. But that's not even, you don't even have to go that far, because this is what the very first movie in this franchise was all about. At the battle against the Death Star, X-Wings were flying, blowing up left and right.
Absolutely.
In order to destroy the main... So that whole scene the fact that they turned it on its head, it was almost like that they were consciously spitting on the franchise.
Yes.
They're like taking the core, the origin of the franchise and going, that was wrong.
Yes.
It was like, no, it wasn't.
Everyone knows that the way you defeat the First Order is by flying through space using the Force.
Exactly.
Everybody knows that. Exactly. There is no... I don't care about Dreadnoughts or X-Wing fighters or TIE fighters. I'm unconscious. I'm going to wake up. We'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
But it also kind of goes back to another theme, which I find problematic. Where the hell did the First Order come from? Where did Snoke come from? Okay. Like, if she was like, oh my God, you took out the Dreadnought, but at what cost to us? I'd be like, lady... Okay, I did not sit on my ass and wait for the First Order to resurrect itself after, the Empire, a mortal blow. So, how is this my fault all of a sudden?
Yeah, because obviously they didn't just come out of nowhere.
Princess Leia.
So she's been there, and they've been, the Republic has been doing all whatever it is that they were doing. And this huge, massive evil force just was allowed to create itself and to... transform an entire planet into a weapon and build, exactly. Where were you when all this stuff could have been stopped, nipped in the bud?
Yes.
And I
do want to comment on this real quick, which is there are a lot of people out there who are like, oh, I'm so glad to see Princess Leia in a leadership role or whatever. And I was like, she's always been in a leadership role. She's always
even when she was a prisoner.
Even when she was a...
She had gravitas and she was in a leadership role.
Right. She's like, wait, this is a rescue mission?
Right.
I mean, she's always, Empire Strikes Back. When she's at the base and she's making sure that her people get off the planet first, she's always... That's nothing new.
No,
there's nothing new about that at all.
But there is an element of it's about time-ism, is what I call it. Well, it's about time that this thing happened, and it's every time that comes up. We had this when they had the female doctor, and it was about time. And where have you been?
Yes.
Where have you been?
But there have been
over and over again when Wonder Woman came out. It's about time. It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's Janeway, Ripley. I mean, you can just go back and list. You can make a thing.
All badasses.
All badasses.
Right.
And all leadership positions.
And by the way, we all love.
Yeah, we all love those characters. And because they were their own characters. They didn't borrow someone else's character.
But the thing is, that's the thing to me that does the best service to society, to everybody, to feminism, to all of that stuff, is not to take old characters and rehash them, but to give them their own franchises. Right.
Exactly. Because it doesn't... I mean, it's not... You're not giving someone... I mean, every time I see somebody get the hand-me-down character, that's essentially what it is.
Yes.
It's like, I don't want to make up a new character, but we want to give this person a hand-me-down character. And
true.
I'm like, yeah. And everybody, people get mad about it, and of course, they're all dismissed that they're just a bunch of bigots and whatever. And I'm like, well, there are good reasons not to give someone a hand-me-down character, because it's condescending.
Right.
Give them their own character.
Right. I want the yes. This is exactly right.
But to say this about time argument with Leia, I'm just like, you people have not been watching these movies, because she has been
the whole dynamic in Empire Strikes Back worked because she outranked Solo.
Right.
So
yeah, that was the yeah.
So, so she was constantly like, oh God, speak for yourself, laser brain. That was a really cool. That was a really cool dynamic.
It was the only way that could possibly work.
Yes.
Because then, for one thing, it forced him to... He had to prove himself.
Yes.
Whereas I can imagine, although you didn't show that in the movie, you can imagine someone like Solo probably didn't have to prove himself very often among people he was normally around.
Like Buccaneers and space pirates and whatnot. Yeah.
But with her, he actually had to be more... He had to be better than what he was.
Yes.
So...
Yeah,
it's so weird. She's always been, first.
When she kills Jabba the Hutt, that's the best... one of the best Star Wars scenes ever. She chokes dude to death with her hands.
Yep.
I mean, a chain, but right. I mean, not that I'm glorifying murder. I'm just saying it's like she's this skilled, competent leader.
She's the one that got him out of the hallway when the stormtroopers had him pinned.
She's a competent line officer.
Yeah.
She got
him into the trash compactor, but she got him out of the hallway.
Yes. So when people were like, oh yeah, it's about time that she was a general, and I was like, dude, she was like one of the original, like, rebels.
Yeah,
like, she's like,
plus, like, she was a princess. And
yeah, well,
General,
I mean,
is kind of a demotion from princess.
If that's true, now, I want to be clear that she was a princess of a constitutional monarchy. So it wasn't unearned privilege, per se. She, anyway, that was a joke.
Aside, well, I don't know, that's canon stuff.
It's canon, it's canon stuff. Yeah. So yeah, so those things, you know, the scene where she's flying through space, you know.
It was touching, but to me, I kind of, I don't know whether it was touching because.
It was the world's longest eye roll, by the way.
Really? You didn't
for
like,
me, I was like,
well, to me, I didn't know, I didn't know how I would have reacted to it had Carrie Fisher not died, because I thought that they had that scene immediately before when the bridge that she was on gets blown out. I thought, well, that's how they handled that problem.
Right.
And
it was
if that had been the way, I thought that would have been they would have done a good job because she was looking almost
in that
breaking
scene,
the fourth wall.
I like that scene.
As she got pulled. Yeah.
I mean, not because she died, but because it was very dramatic.
Going, oh my God.
Yes.
It just seemed to me a little, I didn't dislike it. And I'll tell you why I didn't, because it did do one thing that I've been waiting to see, which is I've always wanted to see what she could do. And that has been missing. You have to admit her ability.
Yes.
I mean, she's heard voices a couple of times.
Yes.
But she hasn't been. But yeah, it's a little egregious to have someone pull themselves out of space.
And I can see if she's pulled into space and then like General Grievous and like the one, you know what I mean? Like she's something like she somehow gets back in the ship. I mean, even using the same method.
Right.
But it was like she was unconscious for 10 minutes.
Right. Yeah.
And then she wakes up and it's like, oh God, dude. Okay.
Yeah.
But the Force preserved her and. Anyway,
that was a little bit. That was a little much. They were mining the audience for bathos at that point because
yes.
they were just everybody. They wanted everybody to be sad.
Yeah,
and
right.
in a little way, I hope that's not what they were doing because if that's what they were doing, they were kind of exploiting Fisher's death, and that's
a little bit
gross.
Yeah, because yeah, I was because like when I yeah exactly that's exactly it's
and,
a good point.
And so it, to me, it's like no, she should have immediately like gotten blown out. Shook it off and was like, "Oh crap! I
yeah,
get
but
back
I'm
in the
gonna
ship.
Use, let
yeah.
me let me like meditate real quick and
yeah.
like use the force and
but
then
yeah that part of the scene I didn't but the only thing I did I like I wish that I had known I wish I could go to an alternate universe where I didn't know that Carrie Fisher died and watch the same scene
right
and because I want to know what you know how that would have worked and I would also like to know whether when they wrote that scene and whether she was
that would be interesting to know
yeah.
we'll probably never know that
we probably will never know.
But so yeah, so the so okay, so we covered the Carrie Fisher part, which was you know, and we covered the space the leaving the ship and coming back on. I think that whole side adventure, which
was just
if there are side adventures in
we're
a movie
about the casino planet,
the casino and the mutiny, because
right.
they're both like sort of side adventures.
Right.
And to me, if you're going to do like a sort of branch off into something else, it should eventually reconverge in the story in a way that feeds the story.
Right.
And what happened was. John Boyega and I forget what the girl's name was. They like leave Finn and the girl leave
Rose. I think
Rose. They leave the ship, and they go on the side adventure, and the adventure ends up being a giant failure,
and just basically a giant political sermon.
Right.
I mean, it was just.
And I don't know if people notice this, but Justin Theroux, I believe, was in the casino scene. I mean, I love
was
him
he?
As an actor, and it like he was in it for like 10 seconds. And I was like, what a waste of a good actor,
yeah.
you know. So I think he was the guy, the original hacker.
Oh that, yeah, the guy at the table.
Right.
The, yeah. Okay.
Right.
Huh.
And Benicio del Toro, who you know, I want to see in more movies, but I don't know if this was his thing.
No, and it just and another thing I didn't like about his character is that he, if you're going to have a character that's roguish like that, they've got to do one or two things. They've either got to seem like they're betraying you and then don't, which is what Han Solo did in the first movie. You know, he's like, you know, I'm taking my money and going, but then, of course,
yes.
at the Death Star battle, he comes back. Or they've got to betray you so hard.
Right.
And he didn't really.
Yeah, he was just like,
just kind of
they
a,
look up and he's got like a stack of money and he's like, got a Imperial uniform.
And
it's like,
and
oh,
it's
okay.
just kind of like, well, it was just a way of them. And here's the thing about those two things, and one thing I didn't like, which that particular scene, which was so weak, plays into this. Is that they were old school sitcom plots
yeah.
where everything just goes back to the way it was
right.
at the end. It's like, you know, it's almost
and then
like
freeze woke frame. Up, everybody's laughing.
Yeah, ha! And then it's like, oh, I woke up and it was all a dream. Right. It was just useless. Just useless.
Yeah.
It had no business being in there, and it should have been scrapped as they were scrubbing the script the first time.
Agreed. Agreed.
But I think that they couldn't do it because they wanted to be able to say something about all these gun sellers, you know, and it's right. just like, and fine, whatever. But it was just an ugly sequence. It was yeah. just ugly.
And it was awkward. And then even once the stories all reconverged, the mutiny, the side...
And, yeah, and the it mutiny just, it was just, also to put messages into the story. And it's just like, okay.
Yes.
And then the whole thing was ridiculous because the whole thing, as I said, could have been unraveled if she had just said, yeah, this is what we're really doing, stupid.
Right.
Put your gun down. None of this is necessary.
Right.
But just like in rom-coms where there's always this scene where if one of the characters would just say something,
yeah.
everything would be resolved, but they just don't. They just dumb up and don't say anything.
Yep.
And so it's completely unsatisfying to anybody who has average or above intelligence. You just yeah. sit there going, why? Why did you let all of that happen?
Yes.
When it could have taken three words out of your mouth to fix the whole thing.
Right.
Just unbelievably bad writing. Just,
yes. And well, we talked about the lack of understanding between strategic, operational, and tactical.
Right.
And, you know, going back to the whole Poe Dameron fight scene in the beginning and right. that. And that also, by the way, going back to it, I hate to go backwards, but he's literally doing in that scene where he's attacking the dreadnought the exact same thing he did in the previous movie, which is attacking
right.
the guns.
Right.
And it's like you would think that they would have learned
right.
somehow from that, turbo lasers or whatever. Right.
The exact same thing that they were doing in episode 4. In the yeah. very first movie in the whole franchise.
Yeah, that's true.
It's essentially what this franchise is about.
Right.
And like I said, that whole part, it just made me feel like they were spitting on the franchise. They were just insulting it by saying, look how stupid the thing that this, you know, how A New Hope just didn't, you know, because that's all A New Hope was.
Yes.
We're going to go at this wholeheartedly, and we may lose a bunch of people, but we have to destroy this weapon.
Yes. I would recommend to people who... I mean, some people are maybe comfortable in their ignorance of how bad, truly bad this movie is, and that's completely okay.
Right.
First I'm going to say my problem with the movie, with movies generally, and one of the reasons why writing is important. Number one, you can't have a good movie without good writing. But the other thing is
you can have a beautiful movie without good writing.
You can have a beautiful movie, and I don't even think this movie was terribly beautiful.
No, I mean, no. A lot of it was ridiculous. I mean, I don't even want to get into the scene. The Power Ranger.
Yes, we'll talk about that in a second.
Do we really have to talk about
No, not that part of it, though. We'll talk about that. But the thing about the writing, though, is if you're going to spend $300 million on a movie, okay, spend some money on the writing.
Right.
Okay?
Because the writing is not that expensive.
Right. It really isn't. I mean, and I'm going to refer to another movie, which is Batman versus Superman. We're not going to talk about that at length here. But really, all they had to do was pay Frank Miller like $2 million and say, we want to use the original, like, Killing Joke plus Dark Knight.
Yep.
Like thing. And honestly, why don't you just adapt it for us?
Right.
And the movie would have been beautiful. Right. Now, the reason why it's a problem to me that they don't either spend more money on the writing, it's like, it's not even about how much they spend. It's how much they spend compared to how much they spend on everything else.
Right. It's a ratio. If you're going to spend $1 billion on
marketing, you need to spend $50 million on writing.
Yeah, because here's the thing. That's what the story is.
Yes.
Know? And so that's why you end up with these films that are really flashy, and even sometimes they're really beautiful, because you'll get people, and this one wasn't, but you'll get some movies that do look nice.
Yeah.
And it's because they've actually hired someone who knows how to do that part. They've hired a good cinematographer. They've hired a good set designer. But if you don't hire someone who knows how to write, and the problem with that is that everybody thinks they know how to write.
Yes.
So you get a bunch of, you know...
Writing is a competence, people.
Yeah, have no it's doubt. Not... You can't just put some people in a room that you like and say, let's put together the script. There has to be someone who knows what a story is, first of all, and the story is not what's going on the outside.
Yeah, right.
It's what's going on the inside of the characters.
Yes, and you have to find a way to get that across using
right using the outside medium. Stuff right. yeah using the outside yes. stuff and putting them into situations where the things that they are facing in the setting the changes on the inside of them affect yes. whether they win or lose in that setting, and that's
it's almost like what they did was they were like X-wing check lightsaber check force powers check and like
cool new soldier type
cool
check.
New right and also and porgs.
Yeah.
Merchandising gimmick check.
Yeah.
So and so the thing that
viral gross scene with a you know squeezing a mermaid's boob, just you know what I mean.
Right.
The only reason that happened was so that people would talk about it.
Yes.
There was absolutely no other reason for that to happen other than to get people to talk about it.
Yeah.
That was just such an obvious...
Well, I liked it. Well, it would make me feel better. Because what you're saying to me is, I want you to come and spend $20, $22 on a movie.
Right.
$30 if it's freaking 3D.
Right.
IMAX 3D, whatever. And I'm not going to bother putting the requisite time and effort into writing something where there's like no continuity errors and plot holes.
Right.
Or at least trying to close it up.
There's always at least some character development.
At least some character development. So so moving forward, we know that Rey is untrained and somehow she's
but
still
managed. But it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that she's untrained. She's still a badass.
She gets an A even though for showing up.
Right. She gets an A for showing up, which I think, again...
And Flynn too, a little bit. I mean, he did pick up a lightsaber and hold his own against a
Sith Lord.
Yeah.
Right, which like Darth Vader would have just force choked him or like force lightning him and he would just be
dead.
Well,
no, he wouldn't have. Not with these writers, he wouldn't have.
Right, well, I'm just saying.
Right.
You know, anyway. Okay, so she gets an A for effort, but then like, and I'm going to tell you right now, like I actually like Adam Driver as an actor. I don't like him for this role. And I recently saw him do a TED Talk where he talked about how he got started in acting. And I saw it after I saw The Last Jedi.
Yeah. He's actually a pretty cool guy.
He's actually, he has this level of like self-awareness that I think is missing a lot of actors his generation.
Right.
And I was actually impressed by his TED Talk. And so I came to the conclusion after watching his TED Talk that he was simply poorly directed.
Poorly written.
And poorly written.
Right.
You know, so Kylo Ren as a character is not, it was not, like when I saw Darth Vader when I was a kid and I saw the first Star Wars, I was shitting my pants.
Right. You get granted, horror I was movie like chills when he walks
right
in the room.
It's not, he's like comes in, he's breathing hard. He's like choking some dude. Mm-hmm. And like Kylo Ren, he's just like this, he's like a member of New Order who just had a tantrum.
You almost feel like you want to yell for his parents to get control of him. It's like a kid throwing a tantrum in McDonald's.
Right. And clean up aisle six.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just, I don't understand. The funniest thing is that his character seems more authentic in the bad lip reading videos of The Force Awakens than in the actual film, because it actually seems like the way that they're portraying him in parody.
Yes.
Actually is more like that's the real Kylo Ren. It's just this ridiculous kind of sleazy
right, he's gaslighter.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
like
that's
what he does when they're communicating. That's what he's doing. He's gaslighting her, and then he shows up and it's like, oh, Snoke manipulated me, and then it's like, no, but I manipulated you. And it's like, I understand that like being a Sith Lord is, you know, is a big component where you have to manipulate people, but it was like a slap fight.
Yeah, it was just
I wanted something that was like, oh my God, man, he got them. Like, man, that guy's a genius.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, movies are only as smart as the writing. And the writing wasn't very smart. It's a drum I'm going to beat until I die.
Yeah.
So.
And we should end this. We should
move on.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, so we beat up on Star Wars. You know we didn't like it.
Cleanse. And half the people that saw it didn't.
Yeah,
like
half the people.
That was a disaster.
I get accused of trying to look cool by not liking it. But
whatever,
you know, like this. What's cool about liking a crappy movie? There's nothing cool about that. You know.
And we did like. I mean, I like the characters. I don't like the story that they're put in. I mean, all of the characters are very well done, and I think, you know, they, you can't help but like them, and you can't help but wish that they were in a different movie.
Yes.
Or at least, you know, you wish that those characters had better writers putting them, you know.
Yes.
Putting them to the test.
Yes.
That's what you really like about a character. When you like a character, you want to see them face something where they have to grow, and they're not, none of these
people. If you want to like good injection of Star Wars, read Timothy Zahn's books and read Kathy Tyre's books. And there's another book out recently by Timothy Zahn, which is a sequel to The Heir to the Empire, the Grand Admiral Thrawn. Read that. That's what they really should have based the movies on. Anyway, so we're going to move on.
Yeah.
We're done talking about Star Wars, and we're going to talk about like some other science fiction topics now. So we have a book that we reviewed.
Yes, and we'll put it up for this.
Yeah, put it up.
Yeah. They can't both see it.
Emergence.
Yes.
So we'll put it up here. By CJ Cherry. I think that's how you pronounce her name.
I think that's it. Yeah.
I hope so. Sorry, CJ. So what do you have to say about it?
Well,
you want to like do you know the background of the story
of this
I think what the overarching
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have a general sense of how the human beings
came
to
this is book 19 or 20.
This is book 19.
Book 19.
So she's doing it in trilogies. And so,
three book arcs in the same universe.
Right, in the same universe.
Yeah.
And I have read, I read her Chan'er series, which is in a different universe.
Yes.
It's in the Alliance.
Oh, okay, yes.
Right, sorry. Universe. But, so I'm kind of, you know, I was kind of looking into this and thinking to myself, okay, this is her new book coming out. It's a little bit far into the story.
Yes.
But knowing her and knowing how she writes, I thought I should, you know, I should be able to pick it up. And it's really strange how quickly you start to pick up stuff.
Yes.
Because she's really good at,
she's
at establishing
world building genius.
Yeah, yeah, world building genius, and she slips stuff in almost. I mean, I'm not gonna
matter of factly.
Yep. Heinlein, the way Heinlein does.
Yes. So this person is related to this person, is related to this person. And by the way, that person did this. So this is why you're talking about that now.
And she puts an odd word in a sentence, and you're like, I don't know what that is. But then the sentence finishes, and you're like, okay, I know what it is now.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. So although I would say, for anybody who I would say this is a great book, but I would say if you're not used to her writing, you may want to go back and get into this.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you're not used to her writing, but I'll also say, because you can actually get into the book trilogies in any one of the arcs. You don't have to like start all.
That's
the
why she set them up that way, right?
Yeah, she set them up that way. And
so this would be a good place if you wanted to get into the what would it be, this the seventh trilogy?
Yeah. Yes. So there's going to be two more after that for this arc.
Right.
So there's like seven arcs, right? Something like that. So you can go back to the beginning. I would, because I enjoy like getting into one author and reading all their stuff, especially when the stories are related in some way. Like,
and this is the same characters.
Yes. Right? Yeah, the Foundation series was awesome by Asimov, because even though they weren't all the same characters, they had the same central theme, same things were kind of going on. They had an overarching purpose. So I liked it for that reason.
Yeah.
And I like her for that reason.
That's why I like the Chan'er series for the same reason. And,
yes.
You know, most of the series that I've read, the one exception, which they're making a television show about, The Black Company, the thing that made it go off the rails when they started to put these other characters in there, and you were used to this first set of characters, and then they started to put the perspective in from another angle, and it was just like, my interest just vanished. So it was just, you really need to keep, you know, there's a reason why in the Fellowship of the Ring that Gandalf and Bilbo are still in the story, and it's Bilbo's, because you want the same, you want to know what's going on, and you want the same people that you're familiar with from the previous, the previous book. But the thing that gets me about this is that you normally think about science fiction, and you think about things blowing up and taking a trek and no, this is a very political book.
Right.
It's
a lot of
anthropological
intrigue,
sci-fi,
a lot of subterfuge, intrigue.
And all of the characters are very, well, I won't say smart, but they all have stuff going on.
Right.
And they're
purpose.
You know, yeah. And they think things through in a way that, well, like we were talking about, how they didn't do in the movie we're not going to talk about for the rest of this thing.
Right.
But that's what makes this so good, is that the characters actually think things through, and they're the way that normal people do.
Yes.
And are engaged with each other on that, on the level of very subtle details, and I liked it, even though it was not, and it's not like her Chan'er series at all,
right?
Which was very much more space opera,
right?
They were flying around and
swashbuckling,
very much like that. So this is not like that at all. This plays very much like it is a political thriller,
yes,
in a science fiction setting.
Yes,
it absolutely is.
And the thing I like about the fact that it's a political thriller, like, because, you know, you have these books where it's like, oh, that person's an intelligence operative, or oh, that person's a spy or whatever. And they're like, they're showing up and they're like judo chopping people and killing. And it's like, you know, this is not, this is the story of the guy who actually is doing his job the way, you know, like the CIA's job is not necessarily to go around murdering people.
Right.
Their job is to collect intelligence
and
to be thoughtful and to go, okay, maybe we should do this. So this character, Bren, like, he's that guy.
Right.
You know, he's the guy who's like, I'm going to think about this, and we're going to think this through, and, you know, not show up with guns blazing and, like, you know,
to avoid that, if at all possible.
To avoid that, right. So,
and he's a human, and humans have come to this planet where there is an alien race there.
Oh, yeah, that's background, thanks.
Yeah, the Atevi. And he starts as being a sort of translator liaison with them, but at this point in the series, he is now actually working for the Atevi government as a, I guess a liaison in opposite direction.
Right. Helping to facilitate these refugees.
Yep. And there are refugees that are coming down from a station, which that whole thing... That's
very relevant.
It's relevant. It's really complicated. I don't want to confuse this.
That's cool.
But the main story is about Bran, who we just described, and also Kajeri, who is the son of... basically, who was the emperor of the Atebi.
Right.
That's not the word that they use, but... that's essentially who he is. He's the heir apparent to the rulership of the society of this planet, and I really like how. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but I've noticed it because the kid's not dumb either, and he's smart, and he thinks he's only 11. He's 11, right?
Yeah, he's really young.
But
I think he's 9.
Is he 9? Yeah, he's very young, and but he is when he thinks things through. It's also like Bren. But the thinking things through is just the book.
Right.
And they think things through very differently.
Yes.
And there's very much less trust in the kid, I think. I get this sense that Bren is just kind of like, well, I hope all these people do their thing right.
Right.
And you know.
Yes.
But with the kid, even though he doesn't really have a lot of power...
yet.
He's always suspicious and trying to figure out what's being hidden and what's, you know.
Right.
And he takes a step here and there, like when he goes to the guy, there's a claimant to a clan lordship that is in this house. Yeah, vacant.
Right.
And in the house with him, and people are trying to figure out who he is and what he's all about. And Kajeri goes. He just goes and talks straight to him. And I was really impressed with that.
I was also impressed about his interaction with the Dowager.
Yeah,
you know, because the way they explained it in the beginning, I was like, oh man, like, you know, when she finally shows up, it's gonna be a shit show,
which is why they didn't want her to go.
Right,
right.
But I also like how she explains all of these sort of tectonic plates that are shifting and moving on the mainland with all that the Atebi government and the people and the conservatives versus the not conservatives and like the, you know, so I liked how they explained. She explains up front how things could potentially be complicated.
Right.
And she goes, okay, the reason why this is a problem is because there are all these people who don't want that, and here are the players, and even though they're on the same side, they don't have exactly the same interests.
Right.
And this is how they're going to go about, this is the uncle, this is the son, this is the dowager, this is, you know what I mean? So I love that, and I was like, man, this is really
deep. You know what this is? This is science fiction for people who like to read deep political analysis all the players in Congress, and you're like, well, yeah, but he's from Texas,
right?
And his constituents won't do that. Yeah, and they,
right, I'm not from Texas. I like to, you know.
Yeah, to really get into this and figure out why, well, I mean, these guys are Democrats. Why will these four guys not vote for this bill?
Yeah.
And then they go, well, it's because he's from Pennsylvania, and you know what's in his district? This thing that will get killed if this bill passes. So if you like that kind of thing, of this huge, it's like a George R. R. Martin cast of not characters but of factions.
Yes,
there are so many factions, and they're all in play and interacting with each other in different ways. It's amazing how she holds it all together.
Yes,
and
she's definitely one of the most solid science fiction writers.
Absolutely,
of the last 20 years.
Well, at least I've never felt lost. I never felt once lost. There are a couple of times when
actually I think she's underrated, to be honest.
Oh, no, she's absolutely underrated.
Yeah.
The fact that Sean Orr hasn't been made into a television series
is an
absolute travesty.
Yes, absolutely. I will say, because we only got a few minutes left, that feel free to ask questions or to...
After the fact, you mean.
After the fact. I mean, at any point, really, during the live cast, you can ask questions.
Yeah.
That's going to be a standing rule, I think, going forward.
But I meant, like, afterward, they can still continue to ask.
After we're done with the cast?
Yeah.
I mean, we'll probably shut down the cast, but they can continue to whatever. But anyway, our just like with, we're on the same page with The Last Jedi.
Right.
We're on the same page with this book, Emergence. Yeah. If you want to get into this next arc, because she's going to have two more in this arc coming out, I would definitely recommend reading Emergence. It's not like a super long read. It's 300 pages.
No, it's really, yeah.
It's not like a Robert Jordan.
And it goes very fast.
It goes very fast.
It goes as fast as a conversation. There's conversations in here where you just, because it's
which
just
is
like,
good, because I got my book late.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Amazon was like a week, like, literally I had like 2-day free shipping. It came like 9 days.
Really?
It took 9 days
wow.
to get to me.
Wow.
8 days. It was crazy. So, and by
I'll
the way,
I'll scold Alexa after this.
But, and honestly, it was just worth it for me to go, next time I'm just going to go to the store and buy it. like in store. It was like $5 extra, and I was being cheap. So I recommend this book.
Absolutely, we will. The series. If you're afraid of getting into it, I definitely would say that from what I can tell from this book about the series that if it sounds good to you, but you just don't want to get started on book 19, definitely go.
Yeah, definitely go to book one. So let me see. We have a couple of. In any case, we're going to wrap this up. We thank everybody who beamed in and asked questions and supported us. Please do go to, we have a Patreon page, which we will put the link for that on the podcast page, on the Facebook page. We'll put it everywhere. We also have a Buy Me a Coffee page, which is linked also in the Facebook page. So we would love to have your support. In any way that you could, even just sharing the links, share the cast.
Even if you hated what we said, share it so that people can argue with us.
Yeah, so people can come on here and troll us and whatever.
Exactly. People have the right to their
opinions. And what else? So definitely support us by sharing or by donating. We are going to have some, and also please let us know what's on your mind. Let us know what else.
Give us some suggestions about what you would like. If you think there's a book coming out, because I think we kind of know what the next book that we want to review is, but if you have an idea about a new book.
We're open to suggestions.
Yeah, we're open to suggestions.
And we will be, as this sort of thing kind of matures and evolves, we'll be doing things like giveaways and we're going to review other things, not just books and movies. We're going to review other nerd stuff.
Yep.
So
television shows are I definitely want to get into that.
Yeah, we'll do some television
shows. Such a different dynamic writing.
In the roundup, we'll talk about like this week's.
Yeah.
You know, we'll do that. So anyway, thank you everybody again for coming in. This has been recorded, also audio recorded. So we're going to put this up as a podcast on iTunes and SoundCloud. So look for that. And thank you very much for tuning in. And we are tuning in. Bye.